You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of White People Won't Save You. This is a podcast where we deconstruct these white savior films and recontextualize them through a Black and POC lens. I am one of your hosts, Jordan Clark.
And I'm the other one, Cameron Mason.
And today we got a movie that I've been dreading since we started this podcast, because I know it's one that people have been asking for, and it's one that I remember seeing, not enjoying, and knowing that I have to watch it again someday. So we're going to get into that, but we also have a guest that we're also very excited to talk to. She is a writer, she is a comedian, she is a rapper, and she is Roxy Hayes joining us today. Roxy, how's it going?
It's me. Hi.
What up?
I'm waving so hard.
That's the princess wave.
This is not the princess. This is slapping the shit out of somebody. Can I curse? Yes,
oh,
right?
Do.
Okay.
Yeah,
please, damn, go for it.
Okay, I'll be forgetting to ask.
Well, Roxy, I follow you on Instagram, as everybody should. And what I enjoy most is your content where you're discussing something that is also near and dear to my heart. Cartoons, whether it's the Hanna-Barbera cartoons from Boomerang days, whether it's the Nicktoons.
I saw that one.
whether it's the animes, all the stuff. Me and Cameron had a conversation a while back that I wanted to introduce to you to get your opinion on it. Because we were talking about who and who is not canonically Black, right?
In these spaces.
So, for example, Skeeter is Black from Doug.
Skeeter Valentine.
Black. Whole family Black. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
The family from Dinosaurs, if not all Black, definitely a mixed family.
So I always felt like the daddy was Black and the mom was white and the children were mixed.
I had the same thing. Cameron thought the reverse.
the mama was Black?
Yes.
You know how, but the daughter be having too much problems with her hair. So I'm like, that's not a Black mama. It's a white mom. And the mama be letting the little baby get away with way too much.
That was the sign. That should have been the sign for me, actually.
But also, you know what? Now that I think about it, I do understand the reverse, because the baby be... No, you know what? Okay. I was going to say, because the baby be talking to the daddy crazy, but the daddy be throwing the baby.
Right. The daddy is like, daddy, I'm not having that.
I'm not playing with you.
He can smack me. Like, I'm not, I'm going to take my lumps, but I'm also going to toss his baby across the room.
He tired after work. That's Black daddy.
Are there any characters in your mind that are just, they're Black? You know what I mean? Like,
Off top, I'm going Piccolo. I feel like everybody knows.
Yeah,
for sure. Like, Piccolo is the Black stepdaddy. Gohan start dressing better once Piccolo started coming around.
Facts.
Sure. I can't think of any more just off top, but I feel like if you just name a random show, I could pick out the Black character.
Hmm. Okay. Do you think, is Courage the Cowardly Dog Black?
That is a mixed baby. I feel like or he was like adopted. You know, he could be like, but I don't even think he's mixed with just like Black and white. Like, that's like maybe like a Black and Asian dog, or like a Black and Latino dog. But like, he's mixed with something, and then he was adopted by a white family. Because he'd be stressed.
Yeah.
For sure. But he also be about that action. Situations.
Yeah.
So like, it's some Black in there. Courage is mixed. And he'd be putting that shit on sometimes.
Are any of the friends from Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends Black?
Well, Wilt off top.
Sure.
Based off of Wilt Chamberlain. So, like, and he's voiced by Phil Lamar. Blue is white.
Oh, for sure.
Coco, I feel like, is maybe Asian.
Asian?
Yeah, I don't know.
Coco, that's like, come on. That's Latinx.
Eduardo's Latinx. They're not putting two Latinx. That's too many people of color.
That's true.
We already got a Black man. But you know,
we can't communicate with one another.
You know what? She might be Latinx.
That's what I'm saying.
Palm tree head, though.
Palm tree hair. I mean, these are getting more into stereotypes.
Yeah, we're wilding. But maybe, but for sure, Will and Eduardo is Latinx.
Hear that.
Last two is between cat dog. Is one of them?
Ooh. Okay, are they the same? Sound... All right, so I feel like it's gonna sound crazy. Dog is black and cat is white. I don't. Dog is just cooler. Like even the bullies like wouldn't talk to dog how they talk to cat. Like I don't know. People was talking. That's to real cat shit. Crazy. People was talking to cat crazy. I don't know. Dog just cooler. I hate that he's stupid, but also just like I don't know. I don't know. I just feel like.
But maybe he's just playing it that way because he doesn't want.
Yeah, you, he you don't know. Want y'all to know. And then their parents were like a frog and an abdominal snow lady. So. Yeah.
Oh my god, I just yeah. saw all that right there. You just brought me back. Whoa.
All right. Last one. All right.
It's like when you have a lucid dream for the first time in a while.
It's like I didn't know that was real.
Yeah. Are either of the Angry Beavers black?
Ooh. Okay.
That's the one I was gonna bring up.
Actually. All right. So I just always feel like the cooler one is at least black. I feel like they're mixed. Fraternal twins,
sure.
Of a black parent, black and white parent, and okay. like whoever the black parent is, one of them hung out more with one of the parents, and that's where the cultural separation comes from.
So, like, they white, but they listen to like a lot of Michael McDonald records.
one of their parents is black, and one of them is white, and then like Norbert just hung out with the dad more.
That's
and
fair. Dad,
hung out with the white moms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm like,
they, and the white mom.
I might have to say they both white, but they like Norbert got swag though.
He just hung out. He would go like to the nursing home or something and be like, hey, yeah. Tell me about the music y'all used to listen to back in the day or some shit. He listens to a lot of jazz. Like, oh, you know what? That makes sense. They are white. They're white, and he listens to jazz. And Daggett's racist.
Yeah, well, that
perfect Cameron, segue.
Cameron is right.
It writes itself.
Perfect segue to today's movie that we're talking about, which, if you haven't guessed it by now, is La La Land. La La Land is a movie that it's divisive in a lot of ways, and I think first and foremost for me, it was a movie that came out at a time. And I think this is part of it, right? Like there's a double side mm-hmm. happening here, because in 2016, a lot of shit was going down, right? A lot of people feeling a lot mm-hmm. of different anxieties, and La La Land felt like the perfect escape for a lot of people. And then there was those of us who could not escape because we didn't have that privilege. So La La Land feels... makes people feel some kind of way for a lot of different reasons. It is a movie by Damien Chazelle, starring Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. It was only like the budget was only $30 million. The box office was $447 million. It got nominated for 14 Ooh. Academy Awards, which was tied for the most all time. And it cleaned up almost. You know, we'll get to that in a little bit.
Almost. I'm sure
everybody remembers. But first question I want to ask is, did either of you see this movie in the theater? Or is this the first time you're seeing this movie?
So I saw it randomly on Hulu because I'm like a big fan of musicals. And like, I love musicals. And so I was like, okay. And I like Emma Stone. Yeah. And I like Ryan Gosling. I love Emma Stone from Easy A, which is Easy A was one of like my favorite movies. It was like one of my comfort movies. And Ryan Gosling, he just be doing stuff, right? So it's like, fair. All right, cool. I'll watch these two white people fall in love. And I saw it on Hulu or Netflix, and I was like, this is terrible. Like, just off top, like the singing was bad. The choreography was bad. Like, neither one of them could really sing. I was like, the story is doo-doo. I didn't understand. Like, I was so mad because this was like last year or the year before. So it's pretty recent. And I was like,
oh wow,
why was everybody sucking this movie off? Like, it was just so good. It was pretty, but the movie was ass. Ass movie.
Cameron, when did you see this?
Oh wow. That is the most direct I've ever heard anybody talk about this movie, honestly. That's real. That's felt. I saw this movie when it came out, you know. Actually, this is around the time I was working at a movie theater. So I think this was like one of the first things I saw. I didn't see it at my theater, but I did go see it. And I thought it was like fine. I even recall giving it like 3.5 stars or something like that when I saw it. Yeah. Comfortable. I was like, this is fine. You know, I get what they're doing. Because you said straight up, they can't sing. They can barely dance. And I'm like, and I kind of got it on first watch. It's like, oh, this is supposed to be like a modern take on like, what if normal people kind of busted out in a song and like felt their emotions like that instead of like it just being a musical. It's actually like connected to some sort of like realism in that sense. So I was like, okay, that's fine. They can do their thing. And then the story kicked in. And that's where I have to like literally like look away from this movie. I just can't even listen to it when they're talking about his problems with jazz. We'll get into all the optics and the things later. It's obvious about, you know, those things. But yeah, I thought it was pretty. I honestly was like, this, it looked good. My guy Damien knows how to frame up a frame. You know, I had seen Whiplash before this, also in the theaters. I was like, my guy's talented. He knows how to whip a camera around and edit it so it looks good. I know the tricks. And then, yeah, the story almost like shocked me with how like out of touch it was. And like, I'm a sucker for pastiche. I like pastiche. I like just, if you're putting pretty shit on the screen, to put pretty shit on the screen, that is fine with me. Mm-hmm. And there's a place for that. I can get down with that 100%. You know, I dare say some classics are like absolute like crap just thrown at the screen, but like still looks pretty. Whereas this like has the nerve to insert itself in history in a weird way. And I'm like, dog, no, not for me. Please stop, actually, because I like Ryan Gosling too. I like Emma Stone too. I like these white people. These are fine white people. And then they go ahead and almost screw up their reputations with it.
Pissed me off.
Yeah, pissed me off a little bit too. But this time around didn't help.
Didn't help its case. Nope.
Let me just quickly, before I get into the summary, run down all the awards it was nominated for, just so people can put this in their minds before I tell you what this movie is
Please
about.
Please remember.
It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Original Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best Costume Design, Best Film Editing, Best Original Score, Best Original Song. And it had two nominations.
Wait, what song? What song?
Two songs.
Oh, okay.
Audition.
Two songs.
And City of Stars.
Both nominated for Best Song.
Man, hell nah.
Best Production Design, Best Sound Editing, Best Sound Mixing. So all of that. And now I'm going to tell you what actually happened in this movie, and you can decide if that is deserving of 14 Academy Awards. Cameron, I don't know if you want to time me, but I'll just jump into it.
Oh, you're getting timed. You're getting timed, brother.
I'm upset.
3, 2, 1.
So this movie opens with a very typical LA day. A bunch of people are stuck on the 405, traffic ain't moving. So instead of just sitting around, everyone gets out of their car and decides to dance in the big opening elaborate dance number of the movie. In this traffic jam, we see Sebastian, who's played by Ryan Gosling, and Mia, played by Emma Stone. And they're both kind of in their heads going about their lives. And we get maybe a meet cute as they kind of honk at each other. And then they just drive off. After that, we learn that Mia is a waitress / aspiring actress. She's living that quintessential LA dream. But after a disastrous audition where somebody spills coffee on her shirt as she's leaving her job and apparently doesn't own another shirt, like terrible actress protocol, like you always keep extra clothes in the car before you go to any audition. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what she was doing, but she's down in the dumps. Her friends say, hey, fuck all that. Let's go to this big Hollywood party. let's meet all these people, let's have a good time. She goes out, she's kind of into it, kind of getting back into the groove of things, except her car got towed because she's a dummy and she parked in the wrong spot. So she makes the baffling
in
she
LA makes, you're wilding.
She makes the baffling choice to, I believe, walk home is what it seems like she's gonna do. But all the way, she wanders into a jazz club after hearing the alluring sounds of Sebastian's jazz piano. Then we cut to Sebastian's perspective. So he has dreams of owning a jazz club, but apparently he got ripped off by somebody in the past, has been down bad ever since, pining for that jazz club. He's a white man who knows everything about jazz. It is his passion, is everything that he loves, but he's being beaten down by the man, aka J.K. Simmons, who just wants him to play some Christmas tunes at his establishment. But Sebastian's not going for that. He doesn't want to play the white man's jazz. He's got to get his soul into it. But J.K. obviously doesn't like that. He fires him on the spot. So after that, Sebastian's leaving, but who had wandered into the restaurant? It was Mia. She's about to go compliment him. Is this our big meet cute? Psych, no. He just bursts by her. He doesn't have time for all that bullshit. He pushes her out the way and walks out. We are now 30 minutes into this movie. Cut to spring. So Mia has more bad auditions and she finds herself at another party. And guess who's playing at that party? Sebastian. It's finally time for that meet cute, right? So Emma Stone in the scene, she's pulling out all the Emma Stone faces and all the you know, little nerdy things she likes to do. She's dancing to Iran. And now these characters get together. There's some brief flirting. You know, afterwards, as they're leaving this party, we get the big musical number from the commercials where they're dancing against the Hollywood Hills. And, you know, it seems like they're coming together, right? Got that will they, won't they going on. But once again, just part ways. So finally, they have that cute date together on the Warner lot where Mia works. We learn all about her family, that her aunt was an actress who inspired her to get into the business. But Mia spills the tea, the ultimate tea. She don't like jazz. And this is a big no-no for Sebastian. Instead of murdering her on the spot, though, he drags her to a jazz club where he then proceeds to mansplain and whitesplain jazz to her and how he's going to basically save jazz. I think he literally says it's dying and I'm going to save it. So afterwards, you know, we're starting to see them getting together. You know, Mia has another callback. She gets heard Sebastian set up another date. But did we forget to mention that Mia already is dating somebody, apparently, some dude named Greg who comes out of nowhere. And she and Greg are, I guess, having dinner when in the restaurant, she hears the song that Sebastian was playing when they first met. And it makes her get up and I guess run again. Roxy, you live in LA. I don't believe you can just run places, but she runs from the restaurant.
No, that's why I'm gonna please keep all these points because I can't
please,
wait.
Please.
She runs from the wherever restaurant they are to the theater where they're playing Rebel Without a Cause, which is the date that her and Sebastian had set up. She arrives just in time. Things are getting hot between them. So hot, I think the film literally melts and stops working. So they take inspiration from the movie and they drive up to the famous Griffith Observatory where we get another big dance sequence. They literally start floating amongst the stars. Their love is so real. And they have a big kiss. The movie fades out. And now it's summertime. Our couple is happy. They're thriving. Mia's writing her one-woman play. Sebastian's doing a bunch of gigs at clubs. They dance all over LA. Great time, right? An hour into the movie, guess who shows up? It's John Legend. Remember John Legend from the commercials? He's in the movie. Here he is I guess, the bad guy? Because him and Sebastian have beef from way back. He doesn't fuck with Sebastian. Sebastian doesn't fuck with him. But Sebastian overhears Mia's mom asking, that motherfucker got a job? Not really. Can he get some money? So he's like, I guess I better get some money. And he decides to join John Legend's band so he can get some money together, buy his club, all that stuff. But when he gets to the audition, or I guess the practice, what's this? This nigga's got a drum machine. This isn't jazz. He's not fucking with this, but he's got to swallow his pride. gotta swallow his pride so he can get this money. And you know, John Legend explains to him in that scene that no one wants to hear that old traditional bullshit, right? So you need to get with the new, get with the times, start playing this music. So time passes. They're both working towards their dreams, but it seems like they're being pulled apart. Sebastian's on tour with the Messengers, who I think are basically what John Baptiste Band turned into in real life. And Mia is trying to get her play together, but it seems like they're growing apart. What's happening to them, right? They get this big fight scene as they get into over Sebastian giving up his dream to have his jazz club. And so it's opening night for Mia's play. First, I don't know how, but Sebastian is terrible at calendar keeping, has booked a photo shoot on the same day as her opening night. John Legend asks him point blank, is this okay? He says, yeah, whatever. I don't know. So he's at this photo shoot. He's trying to plan it out. Mia's having her one woman show, her big opening night. Nobody really showed up. Even the people who ran the play was like, this is whack. We hate it. What is this dummy doing? But Sebastian shows up just in time, I guess, at the very end to say, hey, baby, I'm sorry. Can I make it up to you? And she's like, nah, I don't want to do that. So they break up, I guess. She's like, I'm going home. And he's like, oh, back to the crib? She's like, no, home. Like, I'm going back to Nevada. And so she leaves. Sebastian arbitrarily quits the band to start playing weddings again. Like, I don't really understand what happened to him, but he I guess gave up on that. But what's this? For some reason, a casting director calls Sebastian telling him that they want to talk to Mia because somebody saw her one woman play, wants to audition her for a big movie role. And instead of calling, Sebastian literally drives all the way to Nevada, pulls up to her childhood home, and is like, you're going to go, basically negs her into auditioning for this movie. And so he drives her all the way back to LA. She has her big musical number. This is the only musical number that Emma Stone sounds good in, because it's not jazz. It's like a musical theater number, which is probably more what she does. But she sings a whole song about dreams and auditioning. And it seems like, you know, we don't know if she's going to get the role, but she's like, yo, Sebastian, let's go with us. What's happening? What's going to be, you know, our future? And he's like, you know, fuck me, right? Like, you got a big audition for a movie in Paris. You should just like dump me and go to Paris and be in a movie, and I'll just be here, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so cut to spring, or wait, no, cut back to winter. 5 years later, Mia, she's now an actress. She's married. She has a kid. She's living in New York. Sebastian has presumably saved the very soul of jazz, and he owns the club that he's been going after for this whole movie and is still a bachelor on his own. So, of course, by chance, Mia and her husband end up at the same club that Sebastian owns. And we end with Sebastian on the piano playing his sad boy song from the beginning. And we get a whole montage about basically what could have been their relationship. After he's done, Mia starts to walk for the door, but not before she turns back one more time, locks eyes with Sebastian. They have kind of a wistful smile between them. And then I guess she goes on with her life. He dies alone. And that's the end of the movie.
Wow. Wow.
So.
Wow. I can't believe you did my guy dirty like that.
Yeah, well, look, I guess we got to play. Can we talk for a minute? Let's talk about this movie. I'm sure we all have plenty of hot takes to get off.
Very excited.
So let's go around, starting with Roxy.
I like that.
What happened here? What do you make of this movie?
Okay. So, well, I feel like this movie is legit, like, beautiful gowns, right? Like, it lacked so much substance. There were so many plot holes in it. Like, a lot of stuff just didn't make sense. The one thing I will give it credit for is I like the ending. I usually don't like romantic movies where they don't end up together, but, like, I didn't really want y'all to end up together. Like, I don't feel like they weren't, like, a great couple. I feel like that was very realistic. To your point about the walking, that was like immediately, because I was living out here and I had been living out here for like 2 years when I saw this movie. And I was like, that's not, nobody's doing that.
So off the rip.
Because it's a part.
You knew.
Off the rip, this is bullshit. Especially because I'm like, that looks like downtown. Downtown is the worst part. Like, somebody broke into my car a couple months ago. Downtown stole my broken ukulele and a pair of my J's. They left my Fila's, which that's a whole nother story. But.
They have stopped.
The point, they were like, I'm not wearing those.
I'm not
Phil. just because I'm houseless don't mean I'm tasteless, bitch. So, but like, just, it was just a lot of fluff and stuff and pomp and circumstance. Like, it just, it didn't make sense. And I get that it's a musical and it's supposed to be like, realistically unrealistic, but it was just unrealistic. I didn't like it. It was not as stupid. Like, it's just, and I think I'm more mad because, like I said, I'm a big fan of musicals, and I like some stupid shit. I will watch some bullshit, but it just, like, none of it, I didn't leave the movie feeling satisfied. I felt very unsatisfied, even comparing it to a movie like 500 Days of Summer, right? Like, they didn't end up together, but I still felt satisfied. Even if he wouldn't have met that other lady, wasn't it Autumn? I kind of didn't like, I hated that. That was stupid. But just, if it would have just ended with them being like, it's okay, they were not together, I still feel satisfied. I felt like there was growth. I don't feel like either one of these characters growed. Wow. I feel like either one of these characters grew at the end. Because you bought a jazz club, now you're a better person? No. Because you're an actor and you got married. Bitch, I don't care. Like, it was just very unsatisfying. I still felt hungry. Like, I wasn't satiated by this movie.
I got a lot of thoughts.
I'm so angry. But
I got a lot of thoughts about this movie in 500 Days of Summer, and I'm glad that you brought that up. But Cam, I'm going to kick it to you. Let's hear some of those hot takes.
Man, I'll do my best not to go to 500 Days of Summer. But yeah, this movie is awesome shit. You know what? Besides the whole, like, yeah, it's a musical that's already, like, off-putting to a lot of people. I like musicals. All right.
Is this movie breaking you?
You know what? This movie actually kind of did, low-key. Because I love a good, like, visually stimulating movie, right? I just want to look at the sumptuous visuals. I just want to, like, get lost in the songs and all that. And sure, like, there's a little bit of that going on here. Like, I'll say that stuff on, like, the Hollywood sign, that was pretty cool. Like, that, and their first date when that went off, that was pretty cool. But, like, outside of that, that's where the truth comes in, and it shows that this ain't no meat on the bones. It's like, it is literally, like, the most base version. Like, it is the elevator pitch, right? Mm-hmm. It is a musician who wants to save jazz and an actress who's tired of auditioning when they get together and their lives get better, and then, but they don't work out. So that's what we had to deal with, is that they had struggle, but then it all worked out because, I don't know, white ambition. And then, by the way, like, Mia is never struggling. She got three roommates
in a nice ass house. And then when sorry,
got a job on the Warner Brothers lot. Like, some people could wish for all this.
Yeah,
you know?
Better actor, lady. Like, it's just like,
right. And then when she comes up, she got a nice little house. Like, you were never struggling, boo boo. For people who actually like made jazz music, for people who actually like, for black actors and POC actors, where it's not as easy to just be like, you know, oh, I wasn't the right ingenue that day. Bitch, I wasn't the right color. Like, what? You know? It's like the real problems. You know what? Maybe it's the 2024 me and a nigga got real problems and bills and people calling me with different wants and needs every day. To sit here and look at, like, okay, again, La La Land. It's in the title. It's goofball. I shouldn't even go this hard on it because it's in the name. It's all some bullshit, right? But if you're going to give me something to, like, want for, right? If I'm, even if I am, like, Mia's character and, like, I got it not so bad, you know, and go to the movies and just see my not so bad life on the screen, like, the fuck? That's not goals. That's not me. I don't want to, like, get into that. Oh, man. She's just another. The problem is both characters read like your first draft of any character you've ever written in a screenplay. Everybody is on the down on their leg barista, the down on their leg jazz musician. I just wish my dreams would come on true. And then third act, boom, my dreams came true. But I didn't end up with the love of my bro.
I got
every other character in movies have had it harder than these two characters.
I got some research for you, Kevin. When we get to that, I think you'll be interested in hearing.
I don't like it. And you know, like,
go ahead.
But you know, we'll get to the jazz stuff later. We'll get to the jazz stuff later, because definitely that's really the real problem here. But outside of that, it's just some goofy nonsense to me.
Let me get these three hot takes off real quick. All right. Let's play a
go
game.
Go for it.
Let's play a game. I'm gonna name some musicals. You tell Love me to games. Stop when you'd rather watch La La Land. The first one.
Damn.
Little Shop of Horrors. In the Heights.
Banger.
Fire.
Labyrinth.
Let's go.
New Wonka.
Oh, Dave Bowie.
Even Dave Bowie. I haven't seen it. I'm interested.
Old Willy Wonka.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. All day.
The Greatest Showman.
Oh, yeah, I love that movie. Even
People
though,
love Greatest Showman.
You know, the actual guy was a little racist, I found out. But the movie's message itself was great. You got to pick one.
And these are all from the 1960s or beyond, right? Because this movie is very much harkening back to the 30s and 40s. So I'm bringing up somewhat mm-hmm. recent musicals, right?
100%.
So The Music Man, Sweeney Todd.
Yeah. Trouble, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Johnny Depp, just theater version. You know what I'm not going to get?
Yeah.
That's fair.
I'll still watch it.
The new Les Mis.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I got to stop you. I'm out.
New Les Mis. I'm watching New Les Mis.
You take La La Land over New Les Mis?
New Les Mis is like the problem with that movie is the close-ups. Like, why am I in Hugh Jackman's like the back of his throat when he's singing? Why am I there? Pause.
I'll be in the back of Hugh Jackman's throat. We talking about
pause. This podcast is rated. Golly.
Oh, him a Greatest Showman. But that's why I just love Hugh Jackman.
All right, so
that's true. That's true. So, okay, I'll give it Hugh Jackman.
You're back in.
Okay, so you're both taking Les Mis? Okay.
Yeah, I'll take Les Mis.
I'll take
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Fiddler on the Roof.
You know, I've never seen
it. It's boring. But you know what? I don't like La La Land.
Let's keep going.
So we got to one. We got to one. Yeah, let's go.
Cabaret.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. New West Side Story that Steven Spielberg did.
Oh, my. Yo. New West Side Story was one of my top 10 of that year. I don't even care. I see your face down there, Rocky. I see your face, and that's fine. And that's fine because you know what? The lead wasn't that great. Our homeboy wasn't that. We don't like him, and that's fine. We don't have to like him. But everybody else surrounding him, on 10. On 10.
You know what? All right. Yeah, I didn't even know Steven Spielberg directed that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He just be doing whatever he wants.
My guy got gas in the tank. He was like, put the camera over them and then keep it going, because then we're going to drain the camera under them. And
it
actually, we're not even done yet. Put the camera on top of the whole gym. We're going to see everybody and then come right down the middle of the musical sequence. Looks great. Come on.
You know what? Yeah. I'll watch it.
I'm going to assume that we're all in on old West Side Story as well, then. The original.
Oh, yeah.
Most certainly.
Tick, Tick, Boom. Another recent musical.
I've never even heard of that.
We have a friend in that movie. We have a friend podcast in that movie. We have to love that one.
I haven't even heard of that. But I'll watch it.
Check it out. It's a good one.
Oh, Lin-Manuel Miranda?
If you liked Rent.
Oh, I love Rent.
Then you'll love
I've seen
this.
It. Oh, excuse me, my allergies. Nerd. Yeah, I want to watch that.
Well, then we'll check Rent off the list as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. How we gonna pay?
Still relevant.
Yeah,
I'll just throw out two more because I could keep going. But Chicago, another big.
Oh, yes. I love
A actual best picture winner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna do that.
Moulin Rouge.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. A begrudging yes.
Yeah, it's not great.
A begrudging yes. It's not great.
But that's, I don't know how many that is, but I'm going to say that's almost 10 movies that we've said we'd rather watch.
That's got to be more than 10.
Than,
that was easily 20.
More than that we more than La La Land.
Do I, again.
What's the worst musical? Because I really want to find one. I will stop.
Oh, well,
but that's the thing. Like La La Land is if you let somebody tell you it's the greatest musical of this generation, it's the greatest musical of recent memory. It changed musicals. It brought musicals back. It is, you know, like I watched this movie 2 days ago. I don't remember a single song.
It's okay. And it's fun. And one of those songs won an Oscar. One of those songs is the best song of that year.
Ooh, wait, I'm so sorry to interrupt. I figured out one. I think it's the only one. That new Cats. The 2019 Cats.
I would, this is my only argument.
I ain't watching that, Cats.
Is that movie is so insane. That it's
creepy.
It's not a better movie, but it's more entertaining because it's just fucking crazy. So you know what I mean?
One of those movies has Jason Derulo in it.
So.
One of those movies has Rebel Wilson. I think unzipping her skin to reveal outfit when she also unzips, which is like,
I don't want to hear about Rebel Wilson unzipping nothing on this podcast. I was talking about La La Land. I never thought I'd be like getting this nightmare fuel directly into my frontal lobe.
Now that's what y'all rather watch, that skin unzip versus Ryan Gosling spinning Emma Stone around in the, with six black magic cameras. That's what you want.
Well, I say that to say that this movie is like, there's so many, and we didn't even name the classics. We didn't name Singing in the Rain. We didn't name My Fair Lady. We didn't name Mary Poppins. We didn't. Yep. So, I mean, like, in terms of just a musical, like, this ain't even hitting on, you know, some of the more recent ones that were passable. Mm-hmm. This one is like, I don't remember hearing the songs from this, anybody playing them anywhere. Humming them, you know what I mean? Like, people still have the whole Hamilton soundtrack on their playlist that they listen to regularly. So
I'll be working out.
We're trying to stay on the internet. We can't do that.
Oh, but he can do it. Lin-Manuel.
Well, here's my second hot take, because I'm bringing it back to you, Roxy. What is the difference between this movie and 500 Days of Summer? 500 Days of Summer is a movie that I will admit to liking when it came out, mostly because of the soundtrack. But these days, if you bring that movie up, people will be like, you don't know shit about movies. Like, if you like that movie, like, you're an idiot. You know what I mean? And but now,
those people, like, don't like movies.
But like, comparing the two movies, 500 Days of Summer is not a musical per se. There are musical numbers and elements in it. But the thing about 500 Days of Summer is those characters do actually go on a journey. And here's the biggest difference. And this is going to get us into talking about Sebastian's trifling ass. So, like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character in that movie, the point of the movie is that he's not even tuned into this relationship, right? He's invented a woman in his mind, and he's invented a relationship in his mind. And when you go back again, you know, through the whole thing with his sister, and he's like, well, if you think about it, like, what really happened? And it's like, oh, they kind of maybe, you know, had some lust going on in the beginning, but then as the relationship went along, like, it wasn't really, you know, and it was believable in the sense of, like, sometimes things are just, it's just over. You know what I mean? There's not a reason. Mm-hmm. There's not a big fight or, you know, anything like that. It's just like, this has run its course. The time is over. And when he sees Summer again And he's trying to give her, you know, some heat about, well, when you were with me, you didn't want to do these things, or you didn't want to. And he's like, nigga, I changed. You know
what I mean? Yeah, I didn't like you. I'm sorry, I didn't like you.
Yeah, you know, I'm different now. I didn't want to have a child when I was with you. You just passed. Now I do. You know what I mean? I'm allowed to change my mind. I'm allowed to be a different person than I was when we were together, right? This movie posits, let's break down that fight between them, which is the scene that people bring up as like the big highlight of the movie. They get into a fight. Because seemingly, from what I can tell, Emma Stone does not understand the life of a traveling musician. She, I think, assumed that he would just stop recording at some point or stop touring at some point, and is belittling him for giving up his dream of owning a jazz club. Sebastian makes a crazy ask of her to, why don't you just stop what you're doing and come with me to Idaho, even though your show's about to
Idaho, Boise.
You know what I mean? So that's like, you're clearly not listening to her when she's telling you, I got shit to do. And like, this very important thing in my life is happening in 2 days. I just can't get on a plane. But Sebastian then is like, because this is what I don't understand. You kind of touched on this, Cameron, like, if you are a musician, if you are a working musician, this is it, dog. Like, he signed to a band. So he's a signed artist. He's in a band that is popular, that is touring, that has a record.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he's getting money off the tour. He's getting money off the record. He's getting money off the recording sessions, right? And but she's like, because when she sees him play live, she's giving him a face like, I can't believe you sell out, motherfucker. Like, how could you? He's playing this music.
Go on, because this is
30 issues that I'm ready to.
But it's like, he's doing it. This is the privilege, though.
Right?
Where he's like, well, you know what? I'm going to quit that for my principles and go back to playing weddings. Because I don't want to be encumbered by, and it's like any Octavia Butler worked factory jobs and warehouse jobs that she hated so she could support herself and write books. Black people do not have the luxury of liking a thing to chase their dreams. You know what I mean? So like, he is like, this isn't the perfect ideal situation for me. I'm going to get out. When any of those black people playing backup, you know, to him at his club would have left in a heartbeat to join John Legend's band.
So you want to be with John Legend's band. Thank you.
Right. Okay.
But that's the fight. That's what they're fighting about.
That's the problem. But that's the problem. That's the crux of the problem with the movie, right? Because both of these people were that hard to get to that place. And then when they had the fight was about the places that they had gotten to. I'm like, if you're the movie, right? If you're Johnny L. screenwriter, I know it's Damien Chazelle, obviously, but like, if you're a screenwriter and you're like, this is the theme of the movie, and then they get to the point where they both achieve these things, right? They both get to the point where their achievements are now valid, they're real things in the real world, and they start arguing with each other about them. Did you have that in sight? Were you thinking like, okay, when these people get there, they're gonna have to argue about these things and then make no sense coming from either side, right? Both of their arguments from both sides make zero sense. Emma Stone is like just, you got to stop playing this crazy music that you fought all your life to get to.
With your friend.
He's like, yeah, with your friend who is helping you out. And Ryan Gosling's like, oh, you know what? Why don't you just like skip out on this whole show you probably rehearsed 3 months for and come with me to Boise,
Not
Idaho.
Not even the cool
and
I'm dates.
Like, right. Don't come to meet me in LA. Don't meet me in New York. Don't meet me in Atlanta. Meet me in Boise, Idaho. But then come back potatoes. And do your dinky one-woman show. Right? Like, it's so maddening because think about it. If you're the person watching this movie, you're like, well, why even my achieve my dreams at
all? Yeah, I'm gonna fight with my not girl, with my not wife. And that's the point too. Hold on, I'll let you finish because I got 22 points. No, because mine are gonna be angry long.
Well, just to say, it's like you're going to get all this way to like achieve the thing. You make the arguments directly about achieving things, and then neither person makes sense about what they want from the other person in this life. And that being the reason that they both like exit the relationship. I'm thinking like if they're both artists and like desperately want to create the art, right? Desperate. I'm not saying it's me because we've all been. Everybody got a different situation. I understand what I know what it'd be like. You know what it go. You know what happens.
What?
But that made no sense.
I know gibberish now.
But like, if you want to get all the way to that point, why would you fight about the very thing that meant the most to you? Right? Wouldn't you, in a relationship, want to fight for your partner as well as the thing you fought to get? Like. The Boise argument is obvious bullshit. Like, come on. Well, nobody's doing that. And also, like, her argument about, like, you owned a club. Or you worked at clubs. Like, you were trying to get signed. You were trying to be a musician. And then you get signed. Well, why don't you just stop playing for that dude? It's like, you know how hard it was for me to get there. That's how the money's coming
in. You're not making no money, one-woman show.
Wouldn't it make more sense for him to continue on in a successful band and then use the clout from said band to buy a club? You know what I mean? It's just like
that she could sing at, or she could act at.
Do your one woman show at my club, lady.
Give me some time to make some money so then you can go do your one woman show. Like, he'd only been doing this, both work.
He'd only been doing this for, I think, 6 months.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he had
basically just started. Roxy, go ahead. I want to hear all these points that you got.
Well, no, I'm getting mad. Hold on, I'll be having. This is why,
she's revving up.
That's why I can't do too many talk about stuff shows because I'll be getting really like pissed. This is not even real. Well, okay, my first issue is just the argument. Period. I hate when they do that. It was the same issue I had with The Office when Pam was like, "Oh, you want to go be in charge, an athlete, and have your own business? What about me? Let's stay in Scranton." It's that same goofy, stupid shit. Like, why wouldn't you want your partner to achieve success, especially when you can benefit from that success? Like y'all said, if he gets the clout and opens up the club and the club is successful because you're famous, that's more money income coming in here that I can then invest into you because you're not getting no acting roles. I mean, eventually she did, but at that point, I'm the successful one. Let me use my money to help you get booked. Maybe you need some new headshots, baby. Maybe stop wearing these weak ass clothes. Like, let me
help you.
Let's make this better. I always feel like that's so stupid. That was so stupid. Now, if we're going back to 500 Days of Summer, I know people don't like the movie, and those people are stupid. And here's why: because the movie is great. What the issue is that people were making it seem like Tom was not the villain. Tom was the villain for most of the movie.
Oh, yes.
So,
yes.
Like, people are going into it like, this is a romance movie, and people were gassing Tom, and now years later, they're like, wait, Tom is an asshole. It's like, he was always an asshole.
He was delusional from the start.
Like, a lot of people, just let's be honest, like, they just don't like women, and so they were trying to make it like Summer was the villain. Summer was not the villain. She was open and honest with him, and he didn't like it, and a child had to tell him that he was wilding out.
Yep.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
She communicated clearly. You are correct.
Yeah, the whole time. So, like, it was, I think it's more just like our perceptions changing. It's still a great movie. But yeah, I think, this is the pinnacle of romance? No. And that's the part that people are stupid because I think they used to pretend that it was extremely romantic. And I think that's where this compares. Like, this is not a romantic movie. Like, no part of this, other than like the literal them dancing scenes, like, this is not a relationship that should be romantic. This is a terrible relationship. Y'all don't really have shit in common except you're trying to achieve your dreams. And that's probably why that it went down after y'all achieved them. Because what y'all got to talk about? You don't like shit I like. I don't like shit you like. Like, I don't even want to come to your one-woman show. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, I don't even like theater. What the fuck?
I don't even like theater. You don't like jazz. Like that, I could not. I'm a comedian. I've been a comedian for like 11 years. I can't date a dude that's like, man, I hate comedy.
I don't like to laugh.
I don't like fun, dog.
My life's work. Like, I don't really do it. It's stupid. So I just feel like this was not, and maybe if you look at it like that, maybe it's a better movie, like 500 Days of Summer. Like, this isn't romantic. This isn't something that's aspirational.
But so here's why I will follow up on that. The movie thinks so, because the way that they do Sebastian, he's not wrong, right? You know, like they try to play it in a way where he is both maybe, you know, doing too much, but then also like his ideals and like his desire to, he's the one who's encouraging her to chase her dreams. He's the one who's like, I stand on business and like, I'm not going to compromise my vision for any of this shit. Even though John Legend is like, yo, bro, like if you're trying to get the money, you might have to do a little something. But John Legend is the villain. Because he's the one.
Yeah, why they do my boy John Legend like that? Like he's the sly fox out here.
It's like, oh, I see you're out here broke.
Right. Ben,
let me help you out. Let me showcase your talent. A bag of dreams.
Just like picks into his bag of dreams and sprinkles some dream dust on him. He's like,
look at
hey,
this
dog,
asshole trying to help me out.
Right. And then one black the man. In the flash forward, in the fake flash forward, like, oh no, I didn't talk to him. I didn't even talk to him at that party. I told him to go mind his fucking business. Oh, so I forgot myself.
He played him out in the.
It's
in
crazy. It's so. Actually, the one time I laughed or the one time I reacted to the movie was when he was like, oh, no, don't come over here. Get the fuck away from
beat
me.
Beat it, Buster.
Like, all right, mind my fucking business.
Damn, whatever, Brokey.
That's the crazy thing is that whole end montage that's supposed to be this, like, incredible what-if moment, I'm watching it like,
yes,
but why not? Like, you're selling this to right. something that's an impossible situation
right.
that only happened in a musical montage. Why not?
Like, funny like, enough, why? That jazz song, Darn That Dream, you know?
You're telling me that he couldn't have got his ass on a plane and gone to Paris and played in some clubs like he did in the montage? You're telling me that he could not have, you know what I mean? Like she could, because it's the whole, as a comic book fan and a comic book writer, it's the whole bullshit where they're like, well, you know, honey, I'd love to stay with you, but you know, if anybody found out my secret identity, they would just kill you. And so we should probably break up now. When it's like, oh, so you're saying you can't be a better partner and maybe like keep your shit together so people don't find out who your significant other is and go and kill them? Like, so it's, I don't want to change. So we have to break
up. I like that in this scenario, his secret superpower is that he's a jazz musician. Niggas is going to ignore him already. Don't worry about that.
Well, he's like,
just the normal state of music will do that for him.
Yeah. Well, he's like, I don't want to take away. You have to give 100% to your dream. And it's like, so these two things are, you can't be a person who has healthy relationships and boundaries and have a dream. Like you have to choose one. Is basically
Oppenheimer wanted to split the he wanted to split the damn atom and got the nerve to have two hoes. He had multiple hoes.
He was splitting something else. He was doing a lot of equations.
Well, now I gotta go see Oppenheimer.
dude was doing equations and having babies he didn't want to have. Like what? That doesn't make sense to this movie is some bullshit on that alone.
Yeah, he was dropping more than a bomb.
That's hilarious. But I think it goes back to that. Yeah, like, y'all didn't really struggle for real. There was no problem.
Didn't struggle.
All the problems were problems that y'all made through talking and not talking honestly and openly.
Right. That's the thing. Ooh. If that scene had been her low-key jealous that his dream was taken off and she was still stuck in the mud, or if that scene had
I would have fixed that.
Right, you know what I mean? Or if that scene had been her saying, hey, you know what? I don't really want to act no more. I want to go back to school. You know, I'm giving up on this. And he's like, you can't give up. And she's like, but she's like, but that's you. That's for you, you know? And I'm making a different choice with my life. You know, like that would have been something, but it was just like, I don't like that you are touring so much. And he was like, why don't you get on a plane tomorrow?
Y'all ain't been broke
somewhere
for
you don't want to.
You know what? That's I almost wanted to pitch it to y'all as like, are we going too hard? Is it like the black hustle culture in us where we just like, no, we gotta be making it every day. We gotta be making something every day happen.
No, I think she just I like maybe a little bit, and I'll own up to that because even seeing that my man is touring. I had a house with three roommates, and my man is now on an national tour with a. I'm at the house, bitch. Like, I have no complaint. I'm an actress. My rent's paid. Like, I don't understand where was the issue. I get that right. You wanted to see him, even if you're like, oh, he's not. This isn't his music. He's selling out. Just sell it. Like, I don't get what the isn't that fuck? What you're doing? Like, who said? I think people always say that, like, you're not selling out if nobody wants to buy it. So, like, what's the shut up?
I sound like some Tyler Perry.
I know you're not like, I get not being happy with what he's doing all the way, but that's not your dream.
It's if not he, exactly.
Why are you
exactly?
Mad? You're not gonna work.
I mean, but it's like, because again, the life of a professional musician, right? You were either doing what he was doing, which was begging for a gig, doing whatever you can, playing birthday parties, bat mitzvahs, random restaurants. So he had come up off of that. Now he's on tour. Now he's playing seemingly well-sized venues, getting paid. I guess when it may have been a relevant thing, he had a photo shoot with Mojo. It seems
8 years. 8 years is all it took for Mojo to just disappear off the map. A UK publication at that.
But he seemed to be, again, like if there was a problem, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't seem to be talking about it. This seemed to be the first time they were having this conversation. Again, I don't understand what Mia thought his job was, you know, that he was just gonna one day stop. The tour was going to stop.
Like, right.
He wasn't going
to
do.
What if Sebastian just like gives up the argument? We don't have to do the whole flashback. We could just like, okay, just like, don't do that. And then I act.
But again, Roxy, as a comedian, you were going to go what on tour? You're going to be doing dates and shows, trying to do, you know, and in a relationship, that's just part of being an artist, a creative person. You have to make time for those relationships, those things that are important to you, the people who are important to you, as well as balancing your business, right? This seemed to be two immature people who could not figure out those things. And yet the movie was saying, oh man, you know, what these two crazy lovebirds, if they could have just, they could have had it all. And it's like, they could have though.
You could have.
They could have.
That was
put
just
the
hey,
option in my face.
When are you at home? Let's make sure that when you're here, when you're in town, that I have some time. So if you're recording, hey, just set a day aside for me. We live together. I don't understand. Like, I get it. I understand the busy and all of that, but that has nothing to do with him being a sellout. Y'all just weren't like you. This was a scheduling issue. Y'all should just look at the calendar. Cause also, Mia, you're not that busy, sis. You, it's your one woman show.
Right.
So you can charge your
like, one woman.
You make
yeah. Like, you ain't gotta confirm with the cast.
It's just you.
You wake up in the morning and you say, is the cast ready?
Like, we got FaceTime, baby. There's I'm like, it's too much technology out here for y'all to be at what it was. Y'all didn't like each other, y'all probably wasn't smashing.
Right.
And this is anger. This is anger from not being
anger
in
from
this
not
relationship.
Smashing.
Like, but, I don't know.
So let's get into Sebastian some more though, because the thing again, 500 Days of Summer, Tom is clearly a similar kind of character. He is mansplaining music and all kinds of things to Summer all the time. But here Sebastian is doing that, and it's a noble thing because he just loves jazz so much.
Loves it.
He's got to spread the message.
The art form.
He's got to tell her about it. She's even at the end, she's like, I love jazz now. He converted her.
Oh my God.
But the movie is basically.
It was like, play twice, jazz, like twice if he's hurting you.
She answered that. No jazz, girl. Name six jazz.
Name six jazz.
Well, I was going to say the movie is like, pick whichever one is your favorite. All of the memes of guy at music concert, at sports event, at wherever, just yelling, explaining to girl next to him about whatever is happening, right? Like that's his character in this movie, because every time they're on screen together, they're just yelling, or he's just telling her that she needs to appreciate this music. his sister comes over, who we never see again for the rest of the movie.
Oh, I forgot.
Wow, one scene.
You're sitting on this chair that belonged to this dead jazz musician who I value more than you. You know, like he's really invested in it, but it's like that jazz is his personality, right? Like it's his identity. Mm-hmm. And but it's presented in a way where like, and what a noble, just earnest, dreaming guy. You know what I mean? Instead of like,
but
this
it's
is
crazy because there's like it's like there's so much goodwill about jazz just because of him, right? Mm-hmm. There's no, it's like him telling the legends of jazz, right? Just like, man, Hoagie Carmichael sat in this chair. Nigga, so what? Like, so what?
Okay.
Like, when you go to the DMV, you probably sat in the chair that Denzel Washington sat in like 20 minutes later when he had to get his license renewed. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you telling these like little weak ass legends of jazz, it doesn't make it the noble thing that it actually is.
No.
Right? It's the actual people who played the music, the people that listened to the music. I was trying to wait to get this rant off, but I mean,
let's hear it.
Is now the time? Because like, this is some bullshit, all right?
I got notes.
I wrote this shit down. I got fucking notes. I'm mad, all right? Because I wanted, I feel like this is the problem with the movie. This is the whole problem with the movie. The whole shit crumbles under the weight of this, and the love story crumbles under the weight of it. So let's go. So we're talking about the scene where Ryan Gosling is like lamenting jazz. Like it's gone. People will miss it if I don't keep it alive, right? First up, look at the optics. Look at the optics. When we start this scene, we zoom in out of like a jazz trio. And then he starts to talk about the jazz trio. Piano players got to play his part. Trumpet players got to play their part. All three of these men are old, grizzled black men, which is like the perfect stereotype of like what you assume jazz music to be played by. Just old dudes with like liver spots playing horn instruments. And it's kind of groovy, right? That's what you're hearing. Anytime you hear the word jazz in the 2000s, that's what you assume it to be. Right. And then he starts going off on this tirade about basically just improvisation as an idea. It's like every night is new. You know, each musician is writing, composing, improvising, performing all at once. And this form is dying. This form is dying. This improvisational form that we never had before is dying. All right. So we got the dying art form. We have these old folks playing the music, and it's up to him, the young white, you can call him an ingenue even, to bring something authentic to the jazz experience.
Pure
to bring
jazz.
Something new.
Pure jazz is what he calls it.
This crew, yeah. Quote unquote, you are right. I was literally just about to get to that. That he says, this pure jazz.
None of that, right? Jigaboo
is
stuff.
Going to be brought by him.
That uncut.
See, Ryan Gosling bringing that true jazz to what Wynton Marsalis said in the Ken Burns jazz movie to be the only true American art form. Right? I've done my research here.
I see.
We talked a little bit about like the hustle economics of jazz, you know, well, and also the true hustle economics of jazz was that, you know, we didn't have proper instruments. We had cleaning boards. We were playing basic horns, old dirty horns that we could get a hold of, get the trumpet, get the saxophone, and made a music that reflected our pain and reflected the state of our world. The blues literally is the only true American music because of this. And he has the nerve to say it is not pure. This is the same thinking that led to them talking in the car about how you're not doing this for the art. I'm doing this for the art. I'm doing this pure music. It's already based in bullshit. It's already not real. It's already fake, right? If I'm sorry, and I don't care because I don't got a job. So Damien Chazelle, he's sitting at his typewriter and he's thinking, hey, this guy wants to bring back pure jazz, type. He wants to bring back that real music, type. But everybody else in my jazz club, type, is going to be black people because those are the people that made and solidified the music, type. He doesn't even realize the optics of the situation he's creating, right? And then it's that same thinking that leads to that false narrative about you should come Boise with me to watch me play my show. You should... I won't play music anymore because that doesn't matter. Or, you know, it they seem at cross politics when they're it's not grounded in nothing is basically what I'm saying. I know that was a lot of ideas. But I mean to say that they're not grounded in anything.
Let's follow up with this though, because I need to track down the source, but I was listening to somebody talk just about movies in general, and they brought up this point that I think applies perfectly to this movie, is in a lot of movies with majority white casts, how do you show that your white characters are good and allies? And that's they help a black character, you know, that's not related to them, that they don't know. They just have a friendly interaction with them. And so Ryan Gosling on the bridge, that black woman minding her own goddamn business, he's singing a song, he comes up, he starts dancing with her. Her husband is like, who are you, sir?
Excuse me?
My wife. But then they just
I was just throwing something away. I don't even know why. And then he's okay with it. Yeah, all of a sudden he's like, okay, that's fine. We can all dance now. But, you can dance your ass up off this bridge. That's what you can do.
But in that scene, though, what we're seeing is like in the very beginning of the whole 4 or 5 dance sequence, I think there is one. There's the black people in the truck who I guess were moving instruments. And then I think
it's the optics. Keep going up.
At least I think one black person had part of the song. I think.
Yes, it was a black girl, yeah.
Besides that, the only black person who talks to this movie is John Legend. And then
John Legend.
There's just black people in the background.
My God, you're right.
the jazz scenes in particular, though.
To the point in that first We're a Happy Couple montage, Ryan Gosling is playing in the club, cut to Emma Stone cutting a jig in front of all of these black people, like she's framed in the middle of the scene, doing like some 1920s.
So crazy.
She was cutting a jig.
Yeah, like flapper jig situation,
and we're just surrounded by black people who are like,
"It's how
we love it."
Sure.
We love that. Yeah, exactly. And that's like that's
his club at the end, packed with black people. I think Emma Stone
and
her husband are the only white people player in the club. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's crazy.
So Ryan Gosling is constantly surrounded by black people. The one black person he knows he doesn't like. And the rest of them, I guess,
want to make music with him.
Yeah. The rest of them, I guess, work for him is the implication. So,
that's crazy.
It's
crazy.
It's insane.
Yeah,
it's insane.
It's one of those where I don't think David Chazelle even entered his mind as he wrote it. But when you watch it back, you're just kind of like,
and you know, if you question on him,
he's probably like, what do you
know
mean?
If you question him, you know, if you pressed him and was like, hey dog, how come you didn't cast no black people just like fucking around on the freeway? Why can't we be working at your little coffee shop or whatever? How come we only exist in the jazz clubs?
Remember, it's the same conversation we had about A Quiet Place with John Krasinski, where it's like, you know, he didn't even think about it. And then people are like, so there's no black people in this town? And he's like, okay, well, in the second one, here's a cop who gets killed. And maybe there's... you know, somebody else.
It's just like, wild because you know they're not thinking about it. You know, and then it's not even a concern until it's a concern. And you know he never thought about it. There's no like pre-thought in the pre-visualization. He's like, oh, I'm gonna have him dancing across the moon. It's gonna be so cool. And I'm gonna set up the shot. It's gonna be great. But I didn't think about the little details, like black and brown people exist in my world.
Black and brown people
outside also, of situations where I need them to exist.
Again, Roxy, living in LA, black people, brown people, Asian people, queer people. You know what I mean? Like a broad diverse of.
Somebody said that. They were like, how are there no gay people in LA? Like in the whole movie, we don't see one gay couple at all. We don't see that's like white people
just not even working at the little
there's no gay actors, there's no queer actors, there's no way,
there's definitely some gay actors.
Like y'all just was doing whatever.
Like it just feels you know, like very picky choosy, right? Yeah. I need the black people when they playing jazz, I need the black people when we're playing the dying music that needs to be held up by young Sebastian. That's when we got the black people in there, but everywhere else they are literally like
you don't exist, an afterthought,
non-existent. It's just and it's that kind of thinking that just like, if you get to make a whatever $30 million movie, you get to make this big movie, you got all these hopes and dreams, and you got the nerve to evoke jazz as a whole, as a concept, to be held up on your back is just, it's the same kind of like, I wasn't thinking. It's the same kind of like, not fully baked thought.
Mm-hmm. No.
That kind of ends up being the star of the show.
Before we get into some of the behind the scenes, let's talk about John Legend real quick and his role in the movie. Because, I mean, again, from on site, like Ryan Gosling sees him and is basically like,
yes, what is this? Huh? This is whack. I can't get jiggy with this shit.
You know, he's just like, I don't fuck with this. This music is not the jazz that I know and love. What are you doing?
I'm not a fan.
And John Legend.
And they really make a point to like do the, like when he hits the NPC, like during the recording bit, he's like, oh my God. Not this electronic sequenced crap.
But that's the thing. This motherfucker didn't join Daft Punk. Like, he's still playing jazz music. So,
right, he's still improv. And he's still...
not a fan.
It's crazy because, I mean, you know, Cameron, you and I, both jazz fans. Kamasi Washington, Terrace Martin, Christian Scott. Samara Joy,
Robert Glasper,
Thundercat, Flying Lotus, Madlib has a jazz, you know, outfit, like,
yeah, multiple guru,
the whole UK scene, like everybody in the UK doing, like, jazz is not just a thriving, growing art form, but like there's all kinds of sounds, of versions of, right. You know what I mean? So like, if you want the more traditional stuff, people still doing that. If you want the new, you know, futuristic stuff, people are doing that. If you want a hybrid of that, people are doing that. People are doing jazz with trap beats. People are doing jazz that's, you know, the vocal stuff. Again, like Samara Joy is doing, or like Esperanza Spalding is doing. Like, you can get...
I'd even go further to say that there are white people who are doing new jazz really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's Domi and J.D. Beck.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's bad, there's not good. There's all kinds of people. Yeah,
oh, there's bad, not good. Yeah. Exactly.
Did you already say homie that be with Masego? What's his name?
Oh, well, there's Masego, and there's
not a white dude. What is that dude's name? FKJ.
Oh, FKJ. Yeah. See, and there's stuff like that. Well, the movie doesn't present the opposite take, right? It doesn't present the other argument, right? If he wants to keep this music alive, if he wants to just do modal jazz and sound like John Coltrane, that's perfectly fine. I mean, I wish it wasn't him per se, but like, it's perfectly fine. But you can't treat it like it is this all-encompassing, you know, it all sounds the same. It's all just versions of Charlie Parker's Ornithology. It's all versions of A Love Supreme, right? It's Hoagy Carmichael. Like, all these names are great. It's Take Five. It's all this stuff. Sure, it is some of that stuff. It is a lot of that stuff. But you're selling it short. You, even the person who loves jazz, are selling it short by just like,
yes,
assuming it's this thing that's dying. It's on the vine, about to evaporate in front of our faces, when there are plenty of interesting black and white artists keeping it fully alive.
There's that. And it's like, when I said that John Legend's band basically became John Batiste's band, like, that they did. That's this. John Batiste does that. Yeah, and won album of the year.
Like, that one, yeah, actually, yeah, damn, wow. If you want to really go to it, yeah,
you know, like, he made happy pop jazz music, and everybody was like, we love this, like, let's do this. John Batiste was a band leader for a late night show and said, fuck that, I'm gonna go do my own thing. Basically what Ryan Gosling could have done, right, as in being part of,
he could have gone solo. Yeah,
like, yo, I did that, my name popped off, people knew me. Because that's the thing, people act like, you talk to Robert Glasper's played with Erykah Badu, Robert Glasper's played with Prince, Robert Glasper's played with all, like, you know what I mean, like, he's traveled all around, all different kinds of music, all different kinds of creators, and then he came back and did his own thing and brought a lot of those people with him for his album. So acting as if, like, oh man, you know, the only way to make it is my way is like such, it's a very white perspective. Because look, John Legend, one, in the movie, not even an asshole. Like you said, Roxy, he's like, I see that you are broke. and even goes out of his way to say, I know what you're thinking. The guy before you, he was all right. You're better. You're just difficult to work with. You know what I mean? And like, basically admitting to him, like, I'm doing you a favor, right? And I'm not holding it over your head, you know, but I know why you're not working, and it's because you got an attitude and you always try to pull some shit with people. You know what I mean? The way he did that to J.K. Simmons, right? Like, no black musician who needed that check, because you know he didn't get the check on the way out, who needed that check at Christmas, of all times of the year. And that's why, and he came up to him.
They need to shut a real struggle.
Imagine doing this to your boss, right? Your boss comes up and says, hey, I know what you like to do, but don't do that shit. You know what I mean? Like, just do the job as described, and then we can all go home and be happy. And he starts to do it, and then is like, actually, I'm gonna do it my way. But then his boss is like,
what an asshole.
His boss is like, oh, so remember when I told you not to do that and you did that? Well, you're fired now. And he's like, no. I hear what you're saying, but what you mean to say is, let's try again.
This is better.
And he's like, no.
I feel like he could have talked to the boss and been like, hey, okay, I'm playing this Christmas shit, but like, for like 5 minutes, can I play one of my songs? Like, there was never, that's what the issue with this movie is, privilege and lack of compromise. Compromise could have been made. You don't know how to jazz up Jingle Bells, motherfucker. You can't do like a little, like, why can't you not even conform? There's ways to conform and still make shit your own. That was never the theme.
No,
you broke, and I was sorry, my dog was barking, so I missed part of it.
No,
it's okay. But to the John Legend shit, yeah, that's so fucked up. So just to compare, I have a homie that does like clean comedy. And I opened for him. I had to be clean. I couldn't be like, fuck what you're talking about. I want to curse. No, I'm a Miles Morales. I'm going to do my own thing on your show as you're paying me. Like, that's just not how that works. And I will say, I know a lot of creatives that think and act like that, and they're of a specific hue. And it's just always interesting because, like, a year or so later, they're like, I don't understand why the club won't book me, or I don't understand why I'm not getting work. Because you're not doing the job that they're asking you to do. You can do what you want to do on your own goddamn time, and you use that to fund that. Why don't people get you do the job to fund the bullshit you want to do?
Right.
Okay. That's how you do it.
And that's literally how, like, art has worked outside of like the Roman Empire. Everybody is like, unless you had a benefactor.
Yeah.
You basically, that's how art works. You got to do your stuff for somebody else to pay you so that you can do whatever the hell you think it is that's much cooler.
Yep.
To for yourself. Look, and then when your shit pops off, you can do whatever you want.
Or facts. Or the Chris Tucker method from Friday, right? Like, when my boss tells me some bullshit that I don't agree with, even if I'm like, hey, I have a better way, or I know what I'm supposed to be doing, I say, all right, this person has a weird thing. They like things done a specific way. I don't like to do it that way. It has 20 more minutes to what I'm trying to do, but like, fine. But when they're not there, then mm-hmm. I'll just do what I want to do because they're not around to see it. You know what I mean? When Debo is here, I'll talk again. That's how you got to do it. You know what I mean? So when J.K. Simmons ain't in the club, do whatever the fuck you want to do. He ain't around. He ain't watching. He's not going to know. But when he's literally standing right off frame watching you, like, what did you think?
All night.
And then don't get an attitude when you're fired. Yes. Like, that's the thing that, like, when I be doing some shit I know I'm not supposed to be doing, and I get caught, I be like, nah, you got me. Like, I would have respected that more.
Right.
If he was like, hey, you're fired. And he's like, nah, you got it. Yeah. You're right. I 100% understand why you fired me for doing the thing you told me not to do. This motherfucker got an attitude.
Oh, he you was gonna like, fire but I'm me. Right.
Yeah. And I'm white. That's what it was.
Well, what I'm seeing now that we're talking about this is that the movie is like romanticizing like all the wrong parts of like relationships, art yes. versus commerce. It's like it's romanticizing what like everyone would love to be true about all mm-hmm. these things, right? We would love it if all of our schedules worked out perfectly so that when I did a job, my partner could come with me and hang out and we could like do the thing together. Or you know, I worked at a club and I can do whatever I want and I make the money doing whatever mm-hmm. I want. Or, you know, I'll just, this art form that nobody seems to care about, I can be the one person. I can be the one sole white person to bring back an entirely black art.
Not the famous black man that's already famous and touring. Me.
Me. Me.
Why is that?
Vanilla Ice thought he was going to do it. Vanilla Ice got in the rap game. He was like, I'm going to make this bigger than everybody. It's bigger than hip hop. It's Vanilla Ice. And and we all saw what happened to him.
He got hung out of the window by Suge Knight. I think that's the thing, though, is this movie is trying to play it like the movie's trying to play it like, man, if the world would just get out of their way, you know, if all of these things would just let them be
right.
Let them be great, like LA is fucking shit up for them, you know, these people who employ them, you know, aren't letting them do what they want to do, like why can't the world just let these two lovebirds follow their dreams and be together? And it's like, I'm watching the movie. These are two people. Ryan Gosling is a fuck up, right? Like he is fucking up left and right. This ain't one of those situations where it's like, damn, you know, he was going to be on time, but his car got towed or he got a boot, or like, damn, you know, he really wanted to, you know, make it to Mia's open, you know, her one woman show. But, you know, like some crazy actor guy got in the way. No, he had a scheduling conflict that he knew about. He just didn't double check his calendar. Again, John Legend, the asshole of the movie, is what the movie's telling me, is in his face saying, does this work for you? He is trying to help you.
About this?
He's saying, it's at 7 tonight. Can you do that? Does that work for you?
Sure, I don't have a girlfriend at home.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Basic boyfriend, right? Like you already fucked up, right? And so mm-hmm.
right.
You all of the things
that you're supposed to know. You're supposed to know that stuff.
You're supposed to have all of that arranged, right? Like you need to say, as soon as she says, here's the date of my one woman show, you say, guys, I can't this day. You know what I mean? I need this day. I'm not going to be around. You know what I mean? So he's already forgotten about that. He's been told, I don't know what time it is, but like he goes out. There's a scene where he like leaves the studio and is like seemingly deciding what to do. Understandably, right?
Yeah.
An hour before her show, you don't want to text her and be like, hey, honey, guess what? I'm not going to show up because I got prior obligations. You know what I mean? Like that's fucked up. But at the same time,
you was gonna text her anyway. You were supposed to text her like a good luck. Come on, dog.
But that's what I'm saying. But at that point, though, that's you. That's all you got. You know what I mean? Like, and but you also need to say, hey, hey, John Legend, Mojo Magazine, it's 2016. Can I just show up, take some pictures of me real quick, Photoshop me into whatever you need to Photoshop me into? I gotta go. I gotta leave. You know what I mean? Like, he makes no effort
gotta go.
To get out. He's just like, I guess I have to stay for the whole photo shoot and make it look like I'm upset that I'm here. When it's like, go. Like, if you really, she left was doing with Greg's old ass and ran out the theater.
Literally half the movie is her leaving situations to go to other things. She knows the game.
Right. So it's just like, to say, oh man, you know, Mojo Magazine ruined our relationship. It's like, you did that. Like, you fucked up.
You did that, nigga. That was you. Do better.
But he's right though, right? But the movie's like, we're just gonna cover for him, right? The movie's like, let's just cover for him though, and make sure that at the end of the movie you still like him, because he's really just an idealist. And it's like, even at the end, like, he's alone, he owns the club. I guess he's happy. I can't really read what it was trying to communicate to me. It seemed like he was sad that they weren't together, but it's like we said, you could have been, but also, like, are you just waiting for her? Like, that's weird. It's been 5 years. She's clearly moved on. She is married with a child, and that child is, I believe, at least 3 years old. So, like,
full hands and fingers.
Yeah, she didn't just say, oh man, you know, recently I've made some life decisions on the set of the movie. Yeah, on the set of the movie.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think she walked away.
He was a producer or something. Like, no, I'm finna. And then you got pregnant, which 9 months, close to 9 months. So this all happened within a year. You met and married this man, had children, and then came back.
Right.
Show me that movie. What's that movie like?
Right.
Where the relationship worked out.
What y'all go through? Yeah, I had to go through something.
Yeah, show me a movie where a motherfucker was just successful and like got what they wanted.
That's a fantasy. I'm gonna write that movie. Let's write that movie.
Yeah.
Well, let's get
that's a real fantasy here.
A little bit of the behind the scenes, because here's something that I think makes a lot of this make more sense. Damien Chazelle and his college roommate Jason Horowitz, who is the writer or the composer of, you know, all of these songs, and he composed all the music for Whiplash, and I think he did the music for Babylon, and like, I mean, this is, they do every movie together. College roommates. He wrote this movie in college, and it feels like a movie that a dude would write in college. The characters
didn't even change the draft.
Yes, the only thing that changed between the draft that he wrote when he was at Harvard and the movie that we saw was that they changed it from Boston to LA. He was supposed to have had Miles Teller in the role, but Miles Teller dropped out because it was taking too long to get the movie together. This is an interesting thing. I don't know how true this is, but this is what's been floated around. One of the replacement considerations was Michael B. Jordan. It's unclear if it would have been Michael B. Jordan and Emma Stone, or if it would have been Michael B. Jordan and a black woman, or if it would have been Michael B. Jordan and just somebody else. So,
yo, if it would have been Michael B. Jordan and Emma Stone, I would have been cracking the fuck up. That's such a weird pairing. Y'all are not talking about anything that's the same. Like, not they are two attractive people separately, but have you ever seen a couple and it's just like, y'all are an ugly couple. Yeah. I don't want
to
see.
Like, why y'all? Yeah, why y'all together?
What did y'all? Like, it would need to be like Emma Stone and like, who's like lanky? Like a tall, lanky.
Like Andrew Garfield?
Black man.
Oh, black man.
Who's the black? Yeah, like who's a black.
Lakeith.
Yeah, yeah, I would watch a Lakeith Stanfield.
Lakeith Stanfield opining to Emma Stone about jazz and how he that, needs to save
that
it.
Would actually, but no, because then I'd be mad. I'm like, why are you talking to this white woman?
Why are you talking to a white lady about making jazz better? It's well, like, that's not it. And what would have been worse was, yeah, it would have been worse if Miles Teller was in Boston telling Emma Stone about, oh my God, I gotta save jazz music from these monkeys over here. Because you know they talk spicy in Boston.
They're loose.
Hard Emma Stone's being planted.
Ew.
Emma Stone's role was also maybe going to be played by Emma Watson originally, but she dropped out to be in Beauty and the Beast. And then
I'm so glad, which was terrible.
Yeah.
And I love Emma Watson. That auto-tune in the opening song. Yeah.
But then also Ryan Gosling was supposed to be in Beauty and the Beast.
It sucked.
Ryan Gosling was supposed to be in the Beauty and the Beast, and then he dropped out to be in this movie. Yeah.
What?
So it was a whole weird switcheroo situation where
it could
have been two different films.
A lot going on.
Yeah.
I'm so glad he wasn't in Beauty and the Beast. I liked Homie in Beauty and the Beast. Yeah. He was like
Broadway
singer.
Wait, who is that in Beauty and the Beast?
Evan something face. Let me see. I was just listening to his song earlier. I should know that. John Legend sang in Beauty and the Beast. Yep. There's so much going on.
John Legend got two checks. He was like,
Dan Stevens. That was his name.
Dan Stevens. Oh, okay.
He's like a person. He does things.
He does things.
Yeah.
Ew, that would have been ugly. You know what's even funnier now, though, for real? As shitty as La La Land singing was, Ryan Gosling is like killing it with the Barbie soundtrack. Why didn't they let him sing like that in La La Land?
Well, I think the issue is
my allergies.
between the two of them. So this is a movie that I think it's similar to The Flash, where afterwards, mm-hmm. when they ask the director of The Flash, why the CGI look like that? And he's like, well, it's kind of supposed to be shitty, right? Because we did that on purpose. So don't ask me any more questions about that. And similar, Damien Chazelle, people were kind of like, well, they, you know, the songs don't really like the singing's not great. And he's like, well, you know, it's supposed to be regular people in a musical. Like, we kind of played around with like a meta thing where it's like they kind of know they're in a musical on some level. And so, you know, it's just like if regular people were part of it, but it's like, why do I want to watch regular people?
What?
In the musical, I want to watch Gene Kelly.
Do that. And then you're wondering why you're not getting booked. But that's why you're not getting booked. You're like, right. I don't know why I'm not getting no work because you suck. And that's the story of the movie. The movie should have been two people that suck
realizing
trying to make it, and somehow they make it. That would have been funny. Like, hey, we are both awful at this. Let's scam.
I would have loved that movie.
That would have been like the producers.
That's the producers. Exactly. That's exactly that.
Or if it was like,
we suck.
We're just going to make the worst possible thing. And it ended up being a hit.
Yeah. See?
Well, because that's the thing. It's like,
let's watch some producers.
Yeah. Let's talk about that next week.
That's the thing. Like, if it's a movie, I don't understand making a musical in which you're like, well, you know, the songs aren't going to be that good and the dance is not going to be that great. But like, we did it on purpose because they're supposed to be normal people. And it's like, I'd rather just watch Singing in the Rain. Like, why would I watch a movie about people not doing a thing good, you know, when I could watch people do it good? That's a strange sell.
I mean, yeah, I could watch me suck at shit all day. Like,
I would like that.
You know, that's just hanging out with me. You want to hang out?
But it's like, you know, yeah, I went to an NBA game and like they just put some niggas from courtside in to make me feel better. Like I had a chance. And it's like, I don't want to watch. I want to watch LeBron. That's why I watch basketball. You know?
Could you imagine? The first part of the game is just like seat A13. Come on down. It's just like, Larry's like, oh damn. All right.
Here I go.
Suiting up.
So that was part of it.
Thanks.
Damien Chazelle, I guess.
No thanks all the time.
Yeah, Damien Chazelle, jazz drummer. His dad really loved jazz. He also, I guess, loves jazz as well. But it's a weird thing because the movie, he talks a lot about it, and the movie kind of talks about it. And then there's no resolution for either, where it's like this push and pull between doing the traditional thing, right? Because he cites literally every musical, right? Like, this movie is basically cinephiles go to the musicals, right? Where it's just like, did you catch that reference? Did you see that reference? This is kind of like this. This is kind of like that throughout the whole film. And, you know, he says he did a lot of that on purpose. He wanted to reference a lot of these musicals. Cameron, I know you said you like Pastiche. This is my second hot take. Joker, the Silk Sonic album, Awaken My Love, all of these things where I'm listening to it and I'm like,
let's go.
This sounds like a thing that I like, and I'd rather listen to that. Joker is a lot like Taxi Driver.
You're evoking the thing.
I'd rather
that
watch
I like.
Taxi
yeah.
Driver. I'd rather, you know what I mean? So it's this issue where you bring up you're referencing very famous and like beloved things, and you're making a lesser version of it. And it doesn't make me like the thing you're doing more. It just makes me remember how much I like that other thing and kind of wish I was engaging with that instead. So was that, did you feel that when you were watching this movie?
Well, a separate side point, but it's so funny that you bring up like Awaken My Love, because I had found out, I discovered that Parliament record, the Maggot Brain record, that year. Discovered it, like never really listened to it. Maybe I heard like Can You Get to That like once, and then I like just put it on. I was like, oh wow. And then like 3 or 4 months later, you know, Redbone and all that happened, and the record came out, and I was like,
this feels familiar.
It's not even familiar. Like, he was lifting tracks. It was bad. He was like, dog, I just like pressed record while I played the album. It was pretty crazy. But there is that, you're right, there is a little bit of that feeling. I will say that in this movie, there's like the parts where, you know, the dream ballet and stuff like that. And he does that very well. Like, I would say that whole like last part is very much so like the Red Shoes, which is this, not necessarily like a musical, it's more like a dance ballet, an opera on film. And in that movie, like the second half of the movie is the actual ballet that they were talking about in the first half. Mm-hmm. And so he's kind of evoking it where you have the secondary part where, you know, we get their lives, what could have been. And it's very like, you know, theatrical. There's fake sets everywhere. We're literally zooming from one scene to another on the same set. And, you know, the dance sequences and the blue screen dream ballet. And that's all great. That's fun. That's probably what like was in the trailer, like to bring me to the theater. But then the meat behind it is like the thing that makes the Red Shoes cool is that the first half of the movie is this taut drama about a ballerina who's trying to like get their first big show. They're trying to get their first like big show. And you meet the director, you meet the producers, you meet all the people making the show, and there's all the drama that happens behind it. But then the second half is magical because it finally came to fruition. The thing that the people were working for in the first half came to fruition, and we got to see the product. That's what makes that movie interesting. That's what makes the Red Shoes interesting in that movie. And then in this movie, it's all about the, it didn't happen. This is what didn't happen. This is what, we're just doing this because we wanted to see what it would have been like. So it's like, you didn't work for anything. They don't work out together. This, all the time I'm spent here in the movie, the hope that this couple gets together, that something comes of this, doesn't come to anything except for that he got his club, right? And she got to be an actress. And we don't get to see them do either one of those things other than we get to see him be at
we
the
We saw
club.
Her on that poster. It's like, girl, you could be a model. We don't know that you act.
We didn't even see you in the movie. Like, there's so many scenes of y'all walking past, like, open warehouses on the lot. And y'all being like, oh, shit, they're making a movie over there. Oh, look at that. They're filming some shit over there. When you finally make it, we don't even get to see the fucking movie. Like, we just see your face on a poster. I'm supposed to assume you made it.
Yeah, we did hear that afterwards of the player where they're like, that shit sucked. Like, she spent money to do that? Like, damn.
That's hard.
Yeah.
That's hard. Come on now.
Well, you know,
let me be the judge of that. I've been with her. I know her. I know Mia. She's my friend from 40 minutes ago.
Well, it's all good because...
Let me tell you if this is ass.
Let me tell you about her.
It's all good because at the end, this movie won so many fucking awards. Golden Globe Awards. It won Best Motion Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Director, Best Screenplay, Best Original Score, Best Original Song. If you go over to the Academy Awards, it won Best Director, Damien Chazelle. Emma Stone won Best Actress, Best Cinematography. It won Best Original Score. It won Best Original Song, Best Production Design, but didn't win one award. This is the infamous Oscar Awards in which Faye Dunaway came up and read the wrong name. The story is that...
It was Warren Beatty who read the wrong name.
Warren Beatty,
blaming Faye Dunaway.
When you watch the clip, Warren Beatty opens the envelope, looks at it, looks at Faye Dunaway, looks at the audience, looks back at the thing, kind of shoves the envelope into Faye Dunaway's hands, and then she just says "La La Land," and they all they all come up. There is about 10 minutes of them accepting the award. And then one of the people accepting it kind of gets wind of everything. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, you know, all of that's great. Oh, by the way, we didn't win. And like kind of hands the award away and starts to walk off. But that's when they say Moonlight, Best Picture. And it's a crazy thing to watch when you see it again, because basically what happens is La La Land goes up. It's all white people except for John Legend and like one other Black person, I guess, involved in the production. La La Land steps off.
In a movie about jazz.
La La Land steps off. Just Black people. A crowd of Black people walks up on stage. And it's Mahershala. Janelle Monáe. Yeah.
Yep. And they're all like completely shocked. Their faces are so beautifully shocked. Like what Trevante is like, Oh my fucking God.
You're fucking with us?
I often look at that picture thing, that collage that everybody made when Moonlight won, and it's just everybody
oh my God. they can't even believe it. They made a stellar movie and they're still like, they picked us?
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Which is just sad, just like as Black people, we just already expect to lose. Even if we know we're better, even if we know it's this and that, we're just like, we're not going to win because it's politics. But so that's one of my favorite moments. I love Moonlight just because it did that. That's one of my favorite movies just because.
Yes.
It's crazy because like you both are saying, the year that Green Book won, right? And that infamous picture of Chadwick Boseman looking back at Spike Lee with that face of just like, nigga, you know how this goes.
We knew what it was.
But you know, this is one of the few vindicating moments where the whole conversation up until this point had been, it basically was Moonlight and La La Land, and like which one is going to win. Moonlight,
yeah,
fighting for its life basically a lot of the whole award season run, because La La Land is just eating everything up, cleaning out, winning all the awards. And so when we get to this point and they announce that, I think everybody was just like, of course, you know what I mean? Sure. Yeah. La La Land.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this is why I gave Damien Chazelle some slack, right? Because reading all the interviews, listening to him talk about it, I think he just made a movie. He seems to be a guy who is very sincere. He wanted to make movies since he was a kid. I don't think in his mind he made the greatest musical of all time. I think everybody took it, hyped it up, ran with it. He's not going to say, nah, guys, it's kind of mid. Like, don't go crazy. He's like, I'll take these awards.
Like, I wrote this as a child.
I know. Yeah,
but,
it's like, what would you do? You can't be like, hey, hold on now. I wasn't that good.
I was just fucking around.
You're never gonna do that. If you go up on stage, if you rock to go up on stage and tell like two or three mid jokes that you were like, dang, that wasn't my best.
Man, when I tell you, I went up and was like bullshitting, and then people have come up to me and been like, oh, you killed. And I'm like, oh, yeah, thank you. But in my heart, I'm like, that shit was ass. I didn't even try. So, like, I know that fit, but like you said, I can't go up to them and be like, I was bullshit, because now you don't respect me. Now I can't. I can't, like, nobody's, you're not going to buy tickets again. It's like, nah, she was up there bullshitting. So you got to be like, nah, you know, I was working hard, man. I've been writing them jokes. That specific joke, specifically.
Yep.
So, yeah,
you got to. I couldn't tell it to you again if you asked me, but.
Yeah. Right.
I'm glad you liked it.
But I'm glad you heard it and liked it, yes.
Yep. I'm not, I'm never mad at anybody for creating art. Just like, listen, let me be objective real quick, right? Because it's hard to make a thing. Mm-hmm. It's hard to make a thing. It's hard to get a thing greenlit. It's hard to get backing. It's hard to all of that. And in saying that, this thing sucked. And I just want to reiterate, like, this thing could have been better. But I do respect that. You wrote it in college. You did a thing with your friend. That's what it sounds like. I wanted to make a movie. I made a movie with my friend. Yeah. And then I won an Oscar. That's, I can't hate on you, homie.
Right.
That's fair.
Yeah. But that's
the, because if any of us were in that situation, we would be the same.
Yeah, I'm gonna take, if somebody came to me right now and was like, do you have something to pitch? I got shit that's not finished. I'm giving them this half finished script and we're gonna wing it. Yep. We're gonna wing it and I'm gonna get Ryan Gosling in it. And then if it wins some shit, I'm like, oh my god, I tried. I worked, it was supposed to be like that. Was the camera supposed to shake? Yeah.
Yep.
It's meta. It was inverse. That was on purpose. I don't mean lie.
Well, but this award season tore white liberals apart, right? Because they loved La La Land, but they had to say nice things about Moonlight, right? Like, you can't not, you also have to say Moonlight is a great film, but also I loved this movie about white people dancing in LA. Like, I don't know what to do with myself, because, or it was kind of like when I was talking to the black people, I was like, yeah, Moonlight, like, that's my best picture pick. Like, I love it so much. Like, I hope it wins. But when you got over with your family, you're like, La La Land. Right, like, man, I can't. Please. I hope
La La Land having such a great time over there.
Please, nah, I agree.
What I want to read for y'all, real quick, though, before we get out of here, into looking at how this movie was received by a lot of critics, a lot of think pieces. We live in the land of think pieces, everybody had an opinion about things, but there was a couple of ones. This one from Pace Magazine, I want to read this quote because. The title of this piece is called The Unbearable Whiteness of La La Land, right? It's framing a lot of the how the movie is basically looking back into nostalgia, and nostalgia that is basically for white people. White people get to be nostalgic about the past and wanting to go back to the past and how the past was so great and how they'd love to live in this time or that time. And black people are like, I was a slave. My country was being colonized. I didn't have rights.
Every time.
We'd have to go back to like the dawn of man, I think. Like
before y'all fucked with us.
Yeah.
Before you knew where we were at, you know, I'd like to go to then. But this article has a passage that says, but these efforts at contemporary posture quite literally pale in the face of the film's white nostalgia. La La Land isn't the escapism America needs right now. It's a regressive effort at time travel with no sense of shame for America's many historical sins. Chazelle engages in the most dangerous type of cultural production to have an audience feel without thinking. In this case, that means the past seems like a good enough place to escape our current problems. The film isn't as far as you might think from the asinine phraseology of make America great again. So, I mean, they're going pretty hard this movie. But
yeah, I wasn't about to call the movie MAGA or anything like that,
but like,
wow,
it does point. It does open up that idea of, you know, this being kind of this escapist piece of art, right? Where, you know, people are really just buying into the whole idea of, man, if we could just go back to, because that's the other thing about all those awards, right? Hollywood loves movies about Hollywood. They love movies about people making movies. They love movies about how great it is to be in LA and in Hollywood and how everybody should wish to also do that. So I'm sure that played a part in it, but also, yes, like this looking backwards of what it means to be, you know, an artist or live in LA. I have another quote that I want to read, though, that I think is speaks specifically to Sebastian's character and his love of jazz, right? Because I think there was a lot of think pieces about, oh, so why Ryan Gosling's character, this white guy, can't love jazz. White people love jazz. White people are allowed to like jazz and play jazz music and do all this stuff. And I think people were like, well, hold on a minute. Nobody said y'all couldn't. We're just saying it's
That's
weird.
That's not the issue.
Yeah. It's weird that he's so adamant about it being A, dead, and B, he's got to be the one to bring it back to life. And so, Cameron, you know this artist. This is Christian Scott, who now goes by Chief Zion Atunde Ajua. He is a musician from New Orleans. And this is what he has to say about the word jazz. He says, so to me, when you say jazz, I'm going to have a very specific reaction to that because it's mine. That doesn't mean it doesn't simultaneously belong to you in some ways, but the root of it, without question, is mine. And so I think it's important to ask, why are we using this term that Louis Armstrong and Charles Mingus and Charlie Parker and all of these great practitioners labeled as a racial slur? I've lived the experience when you're playing in New Orleans and you're playing in the street parades and some man throws some fucking coins at your feet and says, you niggers jazz it up. It's an antiquated term. It's a term that also, the first instance of it entering into the zeitgeist and recorded for him is the original Dixieland jazz band, JASS, which stood for Jackass. This was a satirical record where people who couldn't do it essentially pantomiming and making fun of these incredible musicians and visionaries. So it has like a very weird, really nuanced kind of double-edged thing going on, where you're simultaneously being called a nigger and a genius at the same time, which is a very strange space to occupy, right? So he's made the call to not call it jazz music anymore, but refer to it as Black American music or stretch music or, you know, just other forms of that. And I think it's interesting in contrasting that to this, where not only does, I think if you count it up, Ryan Gosling probably says jazz 100 times in this movie.
Oh my God.
But
it's the only thing on his mind.
But also taking into account, you know, like there's an alternative Black perspective here where the history of jazz music maybe isn't a space where, you know, if you're a white person who wants to like be an expert and tell people about it, it's like, but did you really do the history? Like, did you really have the knowledge of not only what went into the creation of it, but a lot of the racist history behind not necessarily just the word jazz, but like the jazz singer, the first big musical is Al Jolson in blackface, right? Like there are some very strange things happening where, you know, like jazz music has been co-opted by white people in a lot of different spaces, similar to rock and roll music, even similar to blues music, and to not credit or feature Black voices in a movie where it's just like one white guy going on a campaign to save jazz music is kind of a strange choice. So
I mean, he only evokes the historians, the custodians of jazz by name. He talks about Charlie Parker, he talks about John Coltrane, he talks about Miles Davis. He hits the big three and then he's out. Yep. And then we see like the Black men playing jazz in the various clubs, the one he owns and the one he doesn't own. But that's it.
Yeah.
Well, then he's
if
got
you
his...
won't contend with an art form. Well, who else?
Well, he's got his little Black protege at the end of the movie. Who he's like, ha ha, he's gonna own the club.
God, yeah.
If this nigga don't stop playing piano, he's gonna take my job.
I forgot about that.
I know, and then gets a little, but maybe in La La Land too, he does own that club. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if you're gonna reckon with an American art form, reckon with it. Talk about it. Don't just like, if I'm gonna talk about comedy, I'm not gonna just be like Carlin, Red Fox, and then like, you know, two other guys and get out of there. I gotta reckon with the whole art form and all of its misgivings and all the things that are a part of it. Mm-hmm. Talking about classical music, I can't talk about Beethoven. I can't talk about Mozart without talking about, you know, the things that they went through. If I'm gonna talk about jazz, I gotta talk about the real shit. I can't say those guys and just peace out. Also, what the fuck is his deal with serving chicken at the restaurant? I ain't like that.
It was Charlie Parker's favorite food.
I don't even remember that.
He loved chicken. Black people love chicken.
Oh my God.
Well, speaking of something that people love, let's go around and see what all the different aggregate review sites gave La La Land, starting with IMDb. So, Roxy, out of 10, what do you think La La Land currently has on IMDb?
9.5 or something like that. I feel like
it's the best movie. High. It's the best movie we have.
I feel like that shit is high.
Cameron?
Wait, am I close?
I'm going to agree. I'm going to say, I don't think there is like, I think there's only like 3 9s or something like that on IMDb. So I'm going to say like 8.5 or 8.7.
It's an 8. Straight up 8.
You price is right. Price is writing me.
Yeah. Yeah. Over under.
That's right. Crazy. All right. Okay. Let's go.
Straight up 8. That seems low.
Yeah. Well,
but I mean, they only got 3 9s. Like,
this is out of.
I didn't know that fun fact.
I think it's like only The Godfather 1 and 2 is like the 2 9s on the site. Oh. It's Shawshank Redemption or something like that.
Oh, okay. Well, that's valid.
Yeah, it's out that's of 2,000 reviews. 2,271 reviews. 10 out of 10, like a dream come true. One of those films that totally banishes the blues away.
Oh, yeah.
So,
literally.
You could tell who loved this movie.
Literally.
Going over to Rotten Tomatoes, what do you think out of 100% La La Land currently has?
He should go first.
All right, Cam, go first.
I think people like this one. The critics even, I think the critics liked this too. I'm going to say 85%.
Okay.
I'm going to go 84.9%.
You ain't. How dare you? How dare you?
How about 91% out of 472 reviews? 91%. One of the highest reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. Let's look at some of the reviews. With his cotton candy coated color palette and Emma Stone's earth-shattering performance, there's plenty of love found within La La Land. Another one, it's a story as old as Hollywood and jazz, and Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone feel like a pairing for the ages.
I do like that pairing.
Yeah, I do like that pairing.
Yeah,
they were in, what's another movie? Crazy Stupid Love. I love that movie.
They're also in Gangster Squad.
Year before or something like that. And they are also in Gangster Squad. Out of the three movies, which one got the high, got the lowest, right?
So critics loved this movie. Like, you can only, if you look at it, there's 428 fresh reviews, 44 rotten reviews. So, you know, hating, it was hard to hate.
Ratio.
Yeah. Looking over at our absolute
favorite.
Not for me! Our absolute favorite here, Roxy, is Amazon.com. Out of 5 stars, what do you think La La Land currently has? Or Cameron, why don't you go first again?
Yeah, Cameron.
Yeah, sure. You know what? Actually, I bet this is one of the few situations where it's like 5 stars.
I'm going 4.5.
Roxy is right on. 4.5 out of 5. Out of
damn, got me. Got
15,000 reviews.
I was going to go 4, but I picked it up.
Best movie ever.
Why
don't
I make this a competition?
5 stars, best movie ever.
It's okay. It's okay. We like that.
I've seen this movie 50 times or more and we'll watch it on.
Okay, get a life. It hasn't even been out that long for you to watch it that many times.
That was a review.
So much other stuff. You ain't watched Black Panther?
Roxy, just to be clear, that was a review from. That was a review from March 5th, 2024. This year.
You know what?
Days ago.
Okay.
Days ago, they watched it 50 times.
They're like, I gotta hear them sing off key. I love that shit. I love that. I need that big circle skirt flapping in the wind. It just makes me so. I hate it now. Like,
So critics loved it, but now we have to put it on our Caucasity ranking scale. Roxy, these are our three levels of Caucasity. The first one being shorts in the winter. Living in LA, I'm sure, and in Houston. I don't know how often you've encountered this phenomenon, yeah. But even when it's 30, 20, single digits, for some reason, white people, they love shorts. They can't put them away. It's an all-year fashion. Even though up top, goose down jacket, Scully, beanie, face mask.
It snowed in Houston and people still be wearing flip-flops. It's like, you don't love yourself.
No. And this is the level.
A Scully with shorts is disgusting.
This is the level where this movie is not hurting us. We just have questions. We're curious. Why did you make these choices? Probably you could do better, but you've seemingly decided that this is how you want to live. And it's really none of our business, but we just want to know. Cameron, what's the second level?
The second level of caucasity of this movie is touching my hair. So this movie probably saw your locks. You know, you got beautiful locks over there. They're probably like, oh, wow. What texture is that? Is that 4A? How does that work? I don't even know the code. And before they're even questioning it, they probably already touching it. They probably already, like, you know, got both hands on the strand, just looking through it. And then at that point, you know, that's a violence against us. That's a violence because, you know, you got sense. You would never just go to your friend Tom and be like, hey, how you get your hair to just not do anything all day? That's so crazy. Let me, like, put my knuckles deep in your, like, inch-long, you know,
what is that?
Handle hair.
What is that, axe pomade?
Yeah. You put pomade on in the morning? I want to touch it to see how spiky it can get. No, I don't want, no. And that at that point, that's, like, an offense. It's not a full offense. You know, they ain't talk about your mama or nothing like that. But, you know, I got an issue with you touching my hair. And that's the second level. Not quite there.
Yeah. The third level is, I guess, all right, just generally Republicans at the State of the Union this past week.
We had Marjorie Taylor Greene trying to make America great again on her own, apparently, in there. Wow.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, like, with the MAGA Republican starter pack, you know what I mean? But it also looked like like she made it at home, you know, because she had like
it looked like every piece she got her kids to make.
Yeah, it looks like she couldn't afford it. It's the knockoff. There's like two A's in the MAGA.
Yeah, she ain't she went to Marshall's for the MAGA stuff.
That's that Canal Street MAGA that she got. It's not.
There you go. Canal Street MAGA. That's that Chinatown MAGA.
Yeah. You know, so that's how she decided to show up at the State of the Union, and then a woman that nobody had heard of until she decided. I don't know who threw who to the wolves, but Katie Britt, who was given the very just, I guess, ungrateful job of replying to Joe Biden's State of the Union, a mix between a hostage video and like like a third act reveal that she's actually the kidnapper. You know what I mean? Like the way that she was on screen.
Just like I was waiting for her to do, like, I don't know if y'all remember The Good Place, but there's that like season finale where Ted Danson reveals he's the bad guy. Spoiler for The Good Place. Sorry. But like, there's that kooky smile he does, and he's like, "I gotcha." I feel like that's what Katie was like doing over the course of the speech. Was like slowly, like, "I'm the bad guy. I'm not good. I'm the problem."
Because she was smiling almost as like a reflex, like, I'm on camera, so I should be happy, even though I'm relaying to you a story about a child who got raped. Which also turned out to be Cap, not true.
Yeah,
or from Joe Biden's time. Yeah, like she was telling a story about something that I guess happened when George Bush was president, and then
it didn't happen.
And then with no context, but then acting when pressed on it, like, well, I was just telling a story. I don't know why you guys thought I was talking about Joe Biden, even though this was a story I was telling directly in response to Joe Biden's State of the Union. You guys are connecting too many dots.
See, I don't know.
I'm just talking.
I don't know if y'all looking for facts. That's crazy. Why y'all looking for facts in this? Like, I was talking. Y'all listen.
I was talking in my spotless kitchen that looks like I don't even live here. Maybe a porn set. Maybe like
I was about to say, it looked like she just like took a picture of Pottery Barn and put it on as a Zoom background.
If you zoom out a bit, she's in art on the walls. If you zoom out a bit, she's in IKEA, and they're just waiting for her to get up before they close.
There's some kid eating ice cream and hot dogs beside her. Like,
the meatballs have gone cold.
But this is the level where this is not only a violence, but it's intentional. You know what you're doing. They're not even trying to hide it. You made the choice, and you're reveling in it. So, third level, out of those three levels, where do you think La La Land gets, Roxy?
Okay, so I'm going to have to. I'm putting it between hair touch and shorts, because I feel like it was, especially if we're comparing, like, I was trying to think of some other movies, like white savior movies. I'm thinking of, like, Blindside. Yeah. And like Freedom Riders,
yeah,
where it's really like, they come here, black, you couldn't have done anything without me. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like those are egregious ones, right? I feel like this one was just, I wasn't paying attention. You know what I mean? I don't think it was like an intentional thing. I think it was just like, I'm white, and so I don't see other people. I'm not even thinking about black people. I'm not trying to necessarily save them, because I don't even see them. So it's that egregiousness that bumps it up from shorts to me, because this is just like I'm gonna do a movie about salsa dancing, but it's just me and some white people. You know what I mean? Like, that'd be weird. That'd be weird. Like, I didn't even think, why didn't I even think that that would be weird? So I think it's right on the cusp. Like, you there, but because I feel like the movie was just also so ass overall, I don't feel like this was on purpose. Like, you're just not good at this specific thing.
Yeah. Cam?
Damn.
Damn.
Wow. It's like, you just like, hey, man, you just made a butt-ass movie. Like, that's your fault.
It's just booty.
For me, yeah, I think it's like a full two. I think it's a full two. Because I'm not interested in giving no slack for a person like Damien Chazelle. I mean, you know what? Shout out to any director who gets a movie made. You know, I understand it's hard. I feel that. However, if you're in a place where you're about to make a motion picture that is going to be a major motion picture that many people will see, your thoughts and your ideas on this shit better be air goddamn tight. Like, you can't just be like, I don't get to make, like, no one, hear me now. No one is just going to hand me a Spider-Man movie, right? Yeah. No one's just going to Marvel is not knocking at my door, okay? But if they did, you know, my Spider-Man pitch is going to be airtight. My pitch is going to be so good. All the ideas are going to be like, wow, you know what? This was knocking on this. This is also talking about this. It's crazy. The third act matched with the first act. That like, no, I don't. You don't get to like not fully think about the state of jazz music if you talk about the state of jazz music, right? It's not me and my friends was playing saxophone one night and missed jazz music, and we decided to chat about it for a bit. You talking about one of the greatest and like only true original art forms in our country, and you playing on its name. Can't do that shit on my watch, dog. You can't just name Charlie Parker and then like, he's like, it's just a cute little music that I like. Nah, dog. People die. Nah, I'm kidding. But like, for real though, you can't just like, you don't get to like, it's not like, if you made a movie about rap, right? If you're making a movie about, like, I just want to bring rap back, or I just want, you know, real rap ain't really rapping right now. You don't get to half talk about rap. Every old head, every new rap person going to be on your ass, making sure every time you talk about rap music, you talk about it with that real stank on it. You talk about that real shit.
You don't get to cast Island Boys and then be like...
Hey, man, all I'm saying is it's a reason why nobody saw Michael Rapaport's A Tribe Called Quest documentary. It's a documentary? But there you go. case in point. Like, it's a reason why nobody saw Michael Rapaport's rap movie.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I'm saying. I'm sitting on that.
I'm with you, Cam, at the two level, because just watching this movie, only thing I could really think the whole time was just, I was just like, you know,
No.
Because then she goes into the chorus, and then I'm like, I don't know if we got to pay for that. But it is that it's just like, no, none of this is working. You know what I mean? Like, to make a musical and have the music and the sing. Like I said, I watched this movie just days ago. I cannot hum a bar. I don't know the lyrics to none of these songs. There's a whole 30 to 45 minutes where they just stop singing. And then they decide at the end, maybe we should bring that back, you know? And so like I also blame the hype, right? Like if this is just a regular movie that people were like, this was fine. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed this, whatever, you know, like nobody's looking at what was the new Tyler Perry movie that came out on Netflix?
Mea culpa.
If somebody said to me,
Kelly Rowland,
Mea culpa is the greatest movie, greatest law movie of all time. You know what I mean? And like people were just hyping that up. And then you watch Mea culpa and you're like, the fuck is this? Like, this is the movie that everybody's been telling me to watch. This is the movie that everybody's saying is this great achievement in film. Like, I feel like
better than Philadelphia.
Yeah. It's like
better than every lawyer movie.
I think we did Damien a little bit dirty in the sense of like, if people hadn't hyped this movie up so much, if it didn't get 14 Academy Award nominations,
would have been there.
I think people would have been like, yeah, I like La La, it's fine. And I too would be like, yeah, it's fine. But 14 nominations, thank God it didn't win and beat Moonlight, because that would have been a riot. Like that would have been a real problem.
That would have been a riot.
That would have been Macklemore beating Kendrick Lamar all over again.
That would have been.
And they go, don't text me.
I mean,
oh, that's gross.
That's crazy. Just the rappiest rap album of all time, jazz rap album. And Thrift Shop was like, yeah. I think Thrift
Shop. Well, you know what? Now I gotta give it a two.
Better than all of this.
I gotta give it a two.
Everybody's fine. Ryan Gosling's fine. Emma Stone is fine. Both of them got more Oscars. They're good. You know what I mean? Like, where nobody's lacking coming out of this movie. But just having the memory of 2016 when everybody was telling me how great La La Land was.
Yeah.
And then I finally watched it before the award ceremony and I was like, this movie? And I had the same exact feeling when I watched it 2 days ago. and I watched it, and then the following night I watched Past Lives. Infinitely better film. Does everything this movie is trying to do times 10. Such a good movie.
Without music.
So it's just one of those things where like repeatedly being thrown in your face and then seeing things that just do everything the movie is trying to do on a million. So yeah, also a two for me. Roxy, we've reached the end. We really appreciate you coming on with us. I know, you know, it seems like this is the movie that you didn't enjoy, neither do we, but it was fun.
Yeah. I wanted to.
Yeah, it was fun getting to talk to you about it. Please tell everybody where they can find you on the internet, any dates that you have coming up, where they can see your comedy live, and how we can support you, all that good stuff.
Dope. Well, thank you. Yeah, I had a lot of fun. Anytime you want to insult white people, I'm here. You can find me everywhere. Roxy Hayes is RoxyHaze. I'm actually doing a tour this summer, so I'll be in Chicago, DC, Houston, New York, San Antonio, cities. I'll be in cities. Mm-hmm. So they'll be posted. But yeah, you can check that out at RoxyHaze.com or just follow me on my social media. I'm also dropping an EP. I'm dropping a Nerdcore EP. I just dropped a single called You Know I'm a Ball. It's based off Hero no Sora, the basketball anime. But yeah, most of my music is Nerdcore music. So if you like Nerdcore rap, if you like anime, check that out. The EP will be dropped this summer. And then yeah, I do stand up. I'm a gamer, so I'm on Twitch. I create content. I like do shows with like Tony Baker and Kevin on stage and stuff like that. So Oh yeah, I have a podcast. Sorry, I'm doing like 60 things. I have a podcast with Cleo Thomas, who's a gamer as well. It's called How to Nerd, so you can check that out too. And then I have a show, another like podcast show, with To Hear More, called Dive in the DMs, where we like go through people's DMs and talk shit. So yeah, check all of that out. It's more stuff, but I'm not gonna keep going. You can just check it out on my social media. And love thank it. Y'all.
Yeah, of course.
I wrote these down.
Cam, you got anything to tell the people?
Yeah, you can find me on the socials, Twitter and IG at TheBlipster1138. Cooking for now. But I'll leave the big announcement to Jordan.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll leave that to you, buddy.
And that is me, Jordan Clark. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JRSosa18, JRSOSA18. I'm also cooking. I have comic stuff coming out eventually. We're working on it. It's getting there. But I guess our big news is that we have some live shows coming up this spring going into the summer. We'll have a show here in Baltimore at The Crown. We'll have two shows in Brooklyn. Cameron, tell the people where those would be at.
Yes, we have one show in Brooklyn, New York, at the Brooklyn Comedy Collective. And then we'll have another show in New York City in Manhattan at Caveat at the Lower East Side, a little storytelling venue. But yeah, we got three live shows set up for, it's looking like April, May. Dates and times will be posted very soon.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we've been talking about that live show for a minute. We finally rose above the ashes to bring you that live content, and we're ready to bring you a really awesome live show.
Yeah, so hopefully people come and see us. It's going to be foolishness. We're talking about bringing back White Man's Burden, for people who don't know that
movie. Yeah, y'all gonna see this.
Is this a movie that you're aware of, Roxy? White Man's Burden. I will say, if you've got some time tonight, look up this movie. It's a movie that John Travolta did directly after Pulp Fiction, in a world where it says roles are reversed. So him and Harry Belafonte have switched social standings, I guess. Black people
and white people have switched social standings.
It's unclear if black people were then the Europeans who went to Africa and enslaved white people, or
we enslaved white people. Maybe
it's unclear if slavery or maybe ever white happened, people or
maybe white people invented jazz.
We don't know if there's like white Oprah or white Beyonce or, you know, black Warren Buffett, or it's nobody knows. They didn't really flesh it out, but just listen to John Travolta's Black Scent, because it is a crazy choice that he makes and maintains for the whole
movie. It was a choice. Definitely a choice.
I don't like it. I'm gonna check it out though.
we had to get it
to hate watch.
We had to get it on DVD because we could not find it anywhere. I think John Travolta may have used his Scientology connections to
scrub that shit.
but we got a copy. We got a copy sitting here at the crib. So everybody going to
burn me a copy.
Maybe that'll be the thing. If you come and see us at Brooklyn Comedy Collective, we might be handing out burn copies of White Man's Burden.
That's hilarious.
Yo, that's so black.
I mean,
yo,
you got to do it so... now. You already spoke now we into have existence.
Come meet us outside. We'll get bootlegs out the trunk. We'll sell you some White Man's Burden.
Yeah, we selling White Man's Burden bootlegs out the trunk at the White People Won't Save You live shows. Come out.
But that's gonna do it for us. Hit us up at white_pod on Twitter, or write to us at whitepeoplewon'tsaveyoupod@gmail.com. Otherwise, we'll see you guys soon. Peace.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't wanna be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't wanna be saved.
You can't save us.
We
don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.